You are listening to Abnormal Spaces.
I'm Donnie.
I'm Ryan.
In this podcast, we discuss conceptual realities, the researchers, authors, and explorers who describe and define them, as well as our personal experiences in these abnormal spaces. In this episode, we discuss a device called the Violet Wand and a mystic who often recommended its use, the sleeping prophet, Edgar Cayce. A long time ago, you showed me this device that you had, and I'd never heard of such a thing. It's called a violet ray, and it was in production in the 20s, 30s, up to 40s, I guess. Well, and they actually make them again today. Even in the 90s, they were making them, and they still make them, and you can still find them. So, but anyway, I was fascinated by it when you showed it to me, especially yours, because it's so antique looking. So for the listeners, so they know what this is, so kind of imagine a plasma ball. You remember those where you'd put your hand on the globe and the little lightning would strike inside the globe or whatever? Well, it's similar to that. However, the electricity will leave the glass and actually touch your skin, unlike the plasma balls. And there's a lot of different things going on with these two things, but the violet wand essentially takes the current from your regular outlet and amps it up to about 40,000-50,000 volts, depending on the model and how the intensity and all that. And there are these attachments, which somewhat limit the amount of electricity coming out. So they're glass attachments and they have plasma inside them. And so it glows this really nice purple or violet. And it looks really cool. And I can only imagine in the 20s what this thing must have been like for people. But there are various attachments for various things. One's kind of like a comb and one's kind of like a disc. But what you do is you use it to heal parts of your body. And one of the things that it does, regardless of what you want to believe or don't want to believe, is it's a vasodilator. So it will open your blood vessels a little bit. There'll be a warming sensation. There'll be more blood, more energy to whatever part of the body you're holding it on or running it over or whatever. So it absolutely has health benefits. What's interesting is, like many things, the amount of benefit is somewhat in question, but just looking at it, it's such a cool looking device. And so where did you get that?
The first one that I got was, it was one that was just a piece of junk, and I found it in a secondhand shop, I think here in town. And no, it was in Owensboro, and it was just this box that was all jacked up sitting on a table. And I opened it up and I looked at it and I was like, what is this? And I was like, I just have to buy it, you know?
Yeah.
It was like 10 bucks or something.
Yeah.
And I brought it home and I had no idea about a violet wand or anything. And being very reckless, plugged it in and just turned the knob, you know?
Yeah.
I want to say there was one glass probe with it, because I wouldn't have known anything if there wasn't.
Yeah.
So I put the glass probe in the tube, and it did turn on, and it lit up. And I was like, what is this? And I touched it, and these, like, sparks came off and, like, shocked my fingers, but not in a bad way. And I was just like, okay. I think what I did was typed in the model or whatever it said on the thing, and then something eventually came up, and it said violet ray device, violet wand. And I was like, this is some Tesla shit. And of course, me being me, I pursued it into better models. And I found one that was on the latest end. It was maybe around like 1939, 1940. And then I also found a guy on Facebook who repaired them and modified them, made them safer. So I sent that in, and he really did an awesome job on the one that I sent. And he had one that was a professional model that was new.
Oh.
That the Bar, B-A-A-R, it's a, he's a doctor, and his company made them for a number of years. They made a lot of reproduction of Edgar Casey stuff, too, which we're going to talk about, Edgar yeah. Casey. So, yeah, he was like, I have this, if you want to buy it. I was like, oh, man. He's like, this one you can run for hours at a time. The original one, since they have a wax surrounding the coils, mm-hmm. if you put them for too long, they will melt the wax and you'll ruin it.
So and
I think it's only like 10 minutes you can run those old ones at a time.
Yeah, that wax shielding is really neat. And just the whole way that it takes the relatively low voltage and maxes it is really cool to me.
Yeah, it's just all Tesla resonance in the coils. And what's interesting is more than the electricity that comes out of the probes and things, which is cool, is the actual field that it produces, which I showed you. You get a freestanding fluorescent bulb and just come within about 12 inches of the thing and it lights up.
Yeah.
And that's the exact same thing that Tesla was doing when he was walking around his property.
Right.
With light bulbs.
Yeah.
For the listeners, Edgar Casey was a prophet, a mystic, whatever. They call him the sleeping prophet because he would just lay down and kind of go into a trance and basically go to sleep. He didn't have any recollection of what he said or
right,
when he got up. But they would record it after he was doing so many of these readings and everything.
It's really neat. He grew up not far from here in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And even as a kid, he was kind of odd. He was raised very devout Christian, and he was a believer. But one of the things that he did that was particularly odd was he would lay with books overnight. And so he'd go to bed sleeping with a book, whatever book it was. When he woke up, he knew the whole book.
Yeah.
And he was able to amass this knowledge just by sleeping with these books every night, different books. He would learn all this stuff. And another interesting thing, when he was doing those readings where he, was in that sleep state, which I'm wondering if it's closer to some in-between state.
QHHT, man.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say. So he would bring a person with him to kind of take notes and blah, blah, blah. Well, one of them was a doctor who was also a hypnotist, and another was a regular general practitioner doctor. He wasn't a hypnotist. I think that probably helped a little bit. As Edgar Casey is explaining what he's seeing in the dream or whatever, then the doctors would somewhat interpret that through their understanding, through their context, and it was almost, like a partnership, but I think that's one of the ways that he was able to diagnose so many people and help them, because he did a lot of work helping people understand medical conditions that they had when no one else really knew what it was or couldn't really explain it. And he was able to get to the heart of it. And I do think it was probably a bit of a team effort, but still. The guy's incredible. He was able to enter this sleep realm that is just...
It was just the subconscious, man. That has to be what was coming through.
Yeah.
Did you happen to listen to any of his readings where it's actually him?
Well, I listened to a little bit of one. He has an interesting voice.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's real like dreamy. Well, he's asleep, I guess.
Yeah.
But the things that are interesting to me is how he starts everyone. It's like something along the lines of, we're here with patient number, and he'll like have a number.
Oh.
It sounds like he's online or something, you know, like, okay, we're here, here we go. And he would offer up these really strange things that the patient would need to do and how long they would need to do it for.
Yeah.
And little side note, I guess his wife was kind of doing the stenographer sort of thing, right?
Yep.
And she also was in there because people would take advantage of him.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. So there was a point to where he was given all these readings for health, but he would give readings on stuff. He was big into Atlantis and stuff, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is even crazier.
Right.
So that's even more QHHT, like tied in with Edgar Cayce such a long time ago, you know?
Right, yeah.
I don't want to get off topic. But she would be in there so that nobody could take advantage of him because apparently the stories go that gangsters and like bookies and stuff would go in there and they would get information on races and things like that. And people were getting rich.
Yeah.
Edgar Cayce wouldn't charge anybody any money because he was of the belief that if he did, he wouldn't be able to do it anymore or something.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So a lot of people were taking advantage of him. Yeah. If you really dig into it, man, he did thousands.
Oh, yeah. Tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. Yeah. He's like the most prolific besides Nostradamus or something. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just insane. I have a few books that have been written about him, and I actually have a Violet Ray book. I want to say there's probably 100 or 200 readings in there that he did for cures using the Violet Ray.
Oh, interesting.
On different diseases and different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that's interesting about those sessions that he did and about predictions he made, it's similar in ways to when Robert Monroe, you know, people would see these different things and then they wouldn't come to be. And part of the reason behind that is those are all potential realities, but they're not guaranteed realities.
Yeah.
And so he had predicted that Atlantis would actually rise and that we would see it in our lifetime. In fact, it was supposed to be like 1999 or somewhere in there that Atlantis was supposed to be discovered and rise out of the ocean or whatever. Obviously, that didn't happen. But I have difficulty just dismissing that as a bad prediction or a bad vision when I know that there are multiple potential realities all the time. And any one of those could have come true. And so I have difficulty just dismissing it, especially in light of some of the other prognosticators that have existed. You know, everyone taps into something that does this sort of thing. They're able to see something. But just because it existed in that moment that they saw it doesn't mean that it is the reality that all of the rest of us will experience.
It probably did happen.
Right.
In some timeline.
Yes.
Just not our timeline. I think that kind of stuff, you know, like the out-of-body state, because I know what it's like. I've done it, and it's so confusing. And I would imagine that somebody who's sort of gained a little mastery over it and kind of obviously can do it better and have more understanding of what's going on. But I still would think, like, it's so malleable, you know, it's probably hard to put a pin in it, you know?
Right.
But I don't know for sure either.
Right.
You know, I just saw a thing where I was actually just watching a video, and I wrote down a few things on Edgar Cayce predictions for 2024.
Oh, nice. Great. Yeah. This is timely.
And this is just going to be really loose. Collective shifting of consciousness to new understanding of our reality. So basically starting to understand that like what we see isn't what it is.
Right.
What we think isn't the truth. You know, it's nothing's concrete.
Yeah, there is no objective truth.
You know, we talk about this all the time, but that's pretty interesting. Discovery of ancient technology based on Atlantis and advanced prehistoric cultures and renewable energy resources that sort of put together our knowledge now with ancient technologies, which we're already seeing.
Yes.
That,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing real quick is there is always the possibility that stuff may be discovered in a way that we, the general public, aren't going to see right away. So maybe it is being discovered today or tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But then we're not going to see it for 10 years, 20 years, or never, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's, again, like, I can see someone January 1st, 2025, like, haha, those things didn't happen. It's like, what, do you know for sure?
Yeah, no, you don't. Nobody right. knows. And there are probably, like, a ton of things that are just in a giant warehouse. I always think of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, in the Ark.
Yeah. It's just like this giant warehouse with big crates.
Yeah.
Climatic upheavals will foster new ways for us to deal with them. It'll like bring necessity to whatever's happening.
Yeah.
Instead of just sitting around like with our thumbs up there.
I always love that stuff too, because it's a... You know, we are optimistic to a degree, and so we would hope that new ways to deal with it would be changing what we do so that we don't impact the climate so much, or maybe have a new building material that withstands certain things or whatever. But what it probably is, you know, like insurance companies figuring out a way not to cover stuff, or like laws being written to protect the polluters instead, or, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That's what's funny about that stuff. It's like, yeah, we'll find a new way to deal with it. We all hope it's the right way, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if it's raining fire, you know, it's probably going to be priority number one to figure out how to not to get a fireproof building or a house or something you put over your roof.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like,
I don't know. Basically, harmonization, holistic spirituality and medicine, energy healing, along with traditional medicine that we have now.
I think he was talking about our podcast.
Yeah, I know. It's really like, weird. Like, I know. I'm just sitting here. I was like, yeah, all this stuff is actually kind of going on, except for this one. Which I don't know, shift in global leadership.
Oh, well, that is going to happen.
From people who have deep intuitions and are really not in it for political gain. I don't know that for sure, but like that would be kind of neat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But again, that could also be those people are being born this year and it'll be,
totally
30 years before the change happens.
Yeah. So it could or never.
Or never.
significant breakthroughs in new energy tech, fusion of ancient technology with modern technology.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you know, I guess we hung out.
Yeah, you must have.
Yeah. This is the wildest thing. He warned about AI and digital surveillance.
Oh, interesting.
And this was in, what was he, born in 18?
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking, is that he probably made that prediction in 1922 or something.
Right.
He predicted the stock market crash, both of them. Well, the early ones, the 25 and 29. But yeah, and no one thought that was going to happen. I mean, clearly.
It's just more mysteries. I don't know. I just look at Edgar Cayce and the things that he said and the things that I've read about it. And it's just crazy in a good way. It's like basically saying he's tapping into the universal knowledge at will. Like he can just, he has that natural ability and he knew how to get himself into it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we've talked before about how it seems like when you're young, you don't know all the things you don't know. So therefore, you don't see the veil between conscious and unconscious, and you know, you experience things differently in a quote unquote more magical way or whatever. So I feel like he figured this out really early as a kid that he could do this, and then he just kept doing it. And because of his religious upbringing, he thought that he was helping God, he was doing God's work. And that, from what I understand, he didn't really see it as some kind of gift or like he was special. He just saw it as, this is a thing I can do, so I've got to go do it for everyone. And I think that's incredible. One, two, I just can't get past the fact that he did it when he was a kid, and then he just never stopped. He just continually did it and got better at it and got more comfortable and was able to help, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of people. And it all started as a child with all the innocence of being a child and being open to all of the possibilities instead of closing them off as we do as we age and, you know, as we go through this society that we live in now, we just immediately start closing stuff off. And he didn't, and he was able to see and do so much.
Yeah, and imagine, like every kid, they all have it.
Yeah.
And imagine if the parents encouraged it.
Right, yeah.
Instead of like just saying, oh, that's, you're just daydreaming, oh, you're just doing this, oh, you're, and that, because that's how we were raised.
Right.
But if we just like break that, if we just break it in half, mm-hmm. And whenever a kid is saying like, I see this all the time, or you look like this, or there's this thing around you, and, you know, then just kind of making that into a learning type thing for them so that they feel it's not bad or it's not like fake or it's not, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, essentially, you know, Edgar Cayce had to like fend for himself in that time.
Right.
Yeah. He's not going to like tell anybody.
Yeah.
What's interesting also is that when he would listen back to his recordings, he wouldn't agree with a lot of it because he talked about reincarnation. And since he was
Christian,
I mean, he and Atlantis and all this stuff, he didn't necessarily believe what was coming out of his mouth.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's really interesting too, is that there was such a disconnect between his conscious and unconscious self. And it kind of reminds me of the artifice that we put on for our daily conscious self and how, you know, limiting that can be. And, you know, he was truly free when he was in that dream state. And I think that's really interesting to note that you can be so much more different than you are. You know?
Oh yeah. Like this thing that you think you are, it's a story and it's false.
Right.
We talk about it all the time because it's very important, I think, just to ponder it or something, like just to have it in your consciousness where it pops up sometimes just throughout your day, you know, as another thing, instead of just thinking about all the shit you have to do or all the shit you've done or whatever.
Yeah.
And instead kind of like turn it inwards and just like find out some shit about what's going on with you, not like what anybody says or reading stuff. And I mean, I love to read stuff and I love information and all that, but nothing takes the place of just being quiet and studying your own consciousness. It's wild.
Yeah. Well, and you know? I like to do little challenges sometimes because I've been noticing how frequently most people time travel in their minds. And what I mean by that is they're always thinking about something that happened in the past, or they're worried about something that's going to happen in the future, or looking forward to something that happened in the future, whatever. But so often, if you really pay attention to it, you're not spending as much time in the present as you are in these other times. And it's kind of pointless unless you subscribe to the theory that you can change things by thinking about them. I've been playing with that a little bit, like trying to change the past a little bit. Another thing real quick, back to the childhood thing. I have only had maybe two or three out-of-body experiences. They all happened as a child. But also, I could fly as a child, and I will never disbelieve that anymore. That's a poorly constructed sentence. But what I mean by that is this. When I got a little bit older, I'm like, oh, that must have been a dream. Or, you know, I'm remembering it in an exaggerated way. But I've come to realize that there are only a few memories that seem to come back almost the same way every time when I think about them. And those flying memories are always the same. Always, always, always. And I believe that I probably could until someone told me I couldn't.
Yeah,
I really do. I have a small scar on my forehead. And it used to be a lot bigger when I was smaller. But it was from flying down the stairs and hitting a wall. But I would just believe that if I jumped, I could fly. And I flew very often.
That's wild.
I know. I remember specifically jumping over. So we had couches kind of in an L formation, and that was before sectional couches. So we had a little end table between the two to make the corner of the L, and there was a lamp on it. And I went running through the kitchen dining area, and I leaped, and I made it over the lamp onto the couch. That's not possible, but it happened. It was possible. I can't figure out how to do it again, but it was possible at that point in time. I absolutely did it.
Just start digging into yogis and shit. They bend all the rules that we know of.
Yeah.
Like I said, in my opinion, everything's possible. And that doesn't mean that everybody can just get up and fly around or whatever.
Right.
But because it takes a level of belief you almost can't have.
Right.
Unless you are, you know, practicing yoga or, you know, a lot of times these awakened sages, they develop these, they call them siddhis, their powers, but they don't pay any attention to them because that's not the thing, you know, or whatever. They'll just be sitting out in the snow in the Himalayan mountains for like 40 days or some shit. They won't get fazed by it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I've seen, African priests sitting in bonfires.
Yeah, stuff. Not burning or anything.
No, they change their vibration. It's almost like they phase out enough to where it's like an overlay, like a transparency on top of it, you know?
Right, like the image of them is superimposed on the fire, but they're not actually physically in that fire.
Right, and do I know that that's true? No. I mean, like I've not done it myself, which is kind of my litmus test, you know? I mean, you don't have to believe a lot of this stuff. You know, if you're drawn to something, just start digging, you know? You get so much information that you're just like, well, there's something to this. I mean, whether or not, like, you know, I can say it's like that, you know, I can't. But damn, it sure looks, you know, it's sure points towards it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and like we were saying earlier, you know, when you really start to like listen to what's going on inside of you or just noticing it and paying attention to it, you'll start to discover those things. Like I was saying about how we're always spending time in the past or in the future or whatever, like, you know, most people can't take a shower without having some kind of imaginary conversation about something going on with someone.
Or do anything.
Yeah, right, yeah. And it's one of those things that we don't even recognize that we do until we start to kind of pay attention to it and see what thoughts tend to bubble to the surface and why am I having those thoughts or what are these thoughts or you know, that kind of stuff. And so in doing that, you know, you start to realize how much you're shaping everything. You're shaping your version of reality. You're shaping your happiness. You're shaping it all. You're actually in much more control than you think. And I think when you start to listen to yourself, you start to realize that I am in control of more of this. This is possible. I do have the energy. I can create the energy.
Or so it seems.
Or so it seems.
Only in the way that, like we always talk about, it's both. The last podcast, we talked about karma and stuff like that. And I always thought it was corny and just like, yeah, okay. But the more I think about it, this is a perfect example, I think. How everybody who believes in God says God's will.
Right.
You know, if you break away all the crap, it just means God's will, whether it's a guy in the sky that you believe or it's a universal whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, the sages say it. Everyone says it. It's the will of what happens.
Right, yeah.
And if what happens is you use your thoughts to change the past or you use your thoughts to shape your future or you get introspective and you start paying attention, whatever that is, it seems like you're doing it, but it's just being done. Like there's no other step you could have taken.
Right.
because you didn't take that step.
Right, yeah. And that's why the key is just starting with noticing, just starting with like not trying to define it so quickly. That's the other thing. I had an epiphany not too long ago where I realized that things that I wanted to have happen ended up happening, but not in the way that I anticipated them to happen. But it's still, the net result was still the same. Something I should work on is not trying to so narrowly define things or to more narrowly define so that I'm asking for or putting the energy out for exactly what I want. But it all starts with paying attention. It all starts with noticing what's going on.
Right, which is, you know, like we were talking about, the guru or whatever calls it grace. They just call it grace. It's like the opening to be able to pay attention.
Yeah.
Because so many people don't even have that opening available.
Right.
And it's a mystery why some people have it and some people don't. It just is the way it is. And what's interesting, going back to like what you were saying about kind of time traveling in your mind or whatever, a really interesting thought that I have is, you know, when people talk about enlightenment or awakening, it's basically being present without past and future.
Right.
And you can't even imagine that, because if I try to imagine that, I can't draw upon words to explain this.
Yeah.
So actually, nothing would be going on. If you were truly present without past and future thinking,
yeah,
then you couldn't explain what is happening, because there wouldn't be any time.
Yeah, there'd be no context.
There would be no context.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like when people talk about awakening and enlightenment and all that, it's basically just the disappearance of your mind. The traditional cultures, you know, they'll say like the mind goes back into the heart, or the mind goes back into the cave or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the mind actually longs to go back, but it doesn't seem like it or something,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
But then they also are like, yeah, the mind's not even real.
Right.
In
yeah.
the first place.
Yeah.
You know, like all of your words aren't real. All of your concepts aren't real. All of your thoughts are not true. It's just all this grand illusion.
Yeah.
It's a grand dream. It's an illusion that is so perfect. You as an individual that you think you are, you want this, you want that, you don't want this, you don't want that. And that is all a dream.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, I mean, we're talking about Edgar Cayce and shit. We always go here.
I know. Well, that's all roads lead back. One thing I think is kind of funny about the violet wand is some people now use that in an erotic way. And that kind of surprised me. Like, I know everyone's into different stuff and whatever, and I'm happy they found this thing that does it for them. But I just wonder if anyone in the 20s and 30s or whenever, you know, its heyday, I wonder if anyone did that then. Because I know that they had services, from what I've read, you know, to cure ladies of hysteria. And so I wonder if that was one of the things they tried.
I mean, human beings, you know, somebody makes a wand that shoots electricity.
Right.
Some dude, or probably some dude.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to put this on my pee-pee, you right. know, like, and then see what happens.
Well, one of them, so everyone was, I don't want to say anally fixated, but there was a period in medicine where they were like, you know, we haven't spent enough time back there. So one of the attachments is like a tube, and that's what it was for.
Put it up your butt.
Put it up your butt.
I can't imagine that.
I can't either.
Because I've felt the power of that thing on my hand.
Right, yeah.
I'm like, can you? I can't imagine that.
No, that's not for me.
No.
But, you know, that's another use for it.
Yeah.
People can do that. And also, you know, you lurk around YouTube enough. There are some strange videos out there. Some people like to show... like to demonstrate using it on somebody else, not in a sexual way, but also kind of a little bit sexual adjacent, you know? So if you're searching for the violet wand, you know, you may come across this stuff. So fair warning to everybody. It is out there.
Yeah. I mean, you can use it on your junk. You can use it on the trunk. No, I'm gonna say that. Shit. No. God damn it. It's interesting, though, that I have nothing to say.
There's a device that's for sale now, and Lori actually has one. It does a couple of things. One, it will help you focus. Two, it will, if you get into a stressful situation and you're feeling like a panic attack coming on or feeling like you're starting to get stressed beyond control, what it does is it emits these little shocks. You can barely feel it. Well, you can turn it up to where you can feel it pretty good. But you hold it in your hand, and it just sends little pulses, little electric pulses. And from what she reports, it does what it's supposed to do. Part of it is that you want it to do what it's supposed to do. I get that.
Yeah.
And the idea is that it kind of takes your mind, it refocuses your mind. So it takes your mind off of whatever's going on that's giving you this anxiety. And you just kind of focus on those pulses and that electricity. And then that helps to kind of center you and ground you.
Interesting.
Yeah. I cannot remember the name of it.
Well, send it to me because, you know, I like gadgets and things like that. I've seen a couple of things on my Instagram feed. Everything just pops up, you know, because I just am constantly clicking on shit.
That'll do it.
Yeah. There have been things like these little, you know, those inhaler things that you have if you have asthma.
Yeah.
They make a thing that looks like that, but you breathe into it, mm-hmm. and it's like
it's got a big ball in it.
No, I have that thing.
Yeah, so do we.
It's so weird. Why do we have that?
I don't know.
Why do we both have that?
We are weird.
This thing, it's for anxiety and panic. It slows your breathing down and you follow these. There's a few things that it does. I don't really exactly know, but it looked kind of interesting. It looked like a bit much, especially like if you were in the throes of some kind of panic or anxiety attack. I think that you would need the easiest thing to use. And if you're in like an airplane or in a big crowd, you're not going to whip this thing out and be like breathing into it. And,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You need something discreet.
Yeah, it's just like you just want this little thing, you know? There was an anti-nausea it looked like a watch, but it basically did the pulses too. And it's supposed to be really effective. And I thought that was really neat.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I mean, it goes to show you that people are still pursuing that. And so that means that there has to be something in it that actually works.
The understanding of it is getting refined.
Yes. Yeah.
And the technology is getting smaller.
Yeah.
And, you know, interesting side note that I was going to say earlier is that they make violet rays now. They make solid state version violet rays.
Mm-hmm.
They all come from China, but it is not the same thing. It doesn't, it does the same thing, but it doesn't use a spark gap. It uses some kind of other solid state circuitry. It doesn't have the same impact. And I think it doesn't even have like the same properties because that spark gap is everything.
That's what I was going to say.
It's everything.
All of it.
Yeah. So, and they call it an interrupter on the old wands. It's a spark gap.
Yeah.
You know, it's an adjustable spark gap. But what an interesting invention.
Yeah.
And it all came about from Tesla because he made these little weird things that just put off this little bit of hair-like electricity that he would just put his fingers on while he's reading, you know? Because he's running these gigantic, crazy things all the time.
Yeah.
Then he started talking about some of the benefits to your body, and then people started catching on to that. You know, they're like, well, would you be interested in developing a blah, blah, blah?
Yeah.
And I think he was kind of like, no, not really, because here's what I know, and here's the, you know, and I think he did kind of join up and make those first ones possible or whatever. But then I think other people took it over and sort of did their thing with it.
Yeah. They used his principles and what he had learned at that point. You know, the knowledge behind it, the science behind it is pretty complex, but the actual device itself, super simple.
Right. And, you know, what's interesting, the parallels between this and the multiple wave oscillator, which we talked about, it's basically the exact same thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Used in a different way, and in the multiple wave oscillator, there's a lot more power coming out, but also the oscillations it produces, it's like 850,000 cycles per second. And I think that the violet ray is more like 150 or 200 or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, the MWO is just like hitting on a higher frequency, penetrating more because of the antennas, and it's a whole body treatment as opposed to like, this is more for like a
localized.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that stuff's really fascinating,
but I love it. Yeah. Check out Edgar Cayce with everything that's going on now. And you know, all the YouTube videos and all the everything, you don't know what's true and what's not true. This dude was for real, and it was so long ago that you can't fake it.
Right.
And
well, and just his family, I don't think they would have allowed him to fake it. And he didn't, like you had mentioned earlier, you know, he didn't even agree with some of the stuff that he was saying. And why would you fake that? And again, how he was able to internalize all those books, like I just don't know how you would fake that.
And just the readings themselves.
Yeah. And the fact that most of those people actually got better, you know, all the medical ones, like the majority of those people got better, saw results.
Yeah. It's so fascinating because like his readings spanned not just healing stuff, but like we were talking about Atlantis, lots of Atlantis stuff.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, you know?
Yeah, and one of them, somebody discovered this death ray, this like laser death ray.
Yeah.
That's why. And we don't know. Maybe
it's amazing just to imagine that and like as you're reading it or hearing it or whatever, you know? You know, get Audible and get some Edgar Cayce books. I mean, while you're doing some whatever and just listen to it, it's just wild.